A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 7, The Service Performed by Daksha, Text 53. Translation: A person with average intelligence does not think the head and other parts of the body to be separate. Similarly, my devotee does not differentiate Vishnu, the all-pervading personality of Godhead, from any thing or any living entity. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Whenever there is a disease in any part of the body, the whole body takes care of the ailing part. Similarly, a devotee's oneness is manifested in his compassion for all conditioned souls. Bhagavad Gita 5.18 says, Pandita Samadarshana. Those who are learned see everyone's conditional life equally. Devotees are compassionate to every conditioned soul, and therefore they are known as aparakya buddhi. Because devotees are learned and know that every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, they preach Krishna consciousness to everyone so that everyone may be happy. If a particular part of the body is diseased, the whole attention of the body goes to that part. Similarly, devotees care for any person who is forgetful of Krishna and therefore immaterial consciousness. The equal vision of the devotee is that he works to get all living entities back home, back to Godhead. Translation again. A person with average intelligence does not think... Correction, below average. Translation again, please don't repeat. A person with average intelligence... Out. Hands up. What's happening here? I think I've just entered a parallel universe. I've always wanted to enter a parallel universe. A person with average intelligence does not think the head and other parts of the body to be separate. Similarly, my devotee does not differentiate Vishnu, the all-pervading personality of Godhead, from anything or any living entity. Om ajanatamranda shaganandjana shalakaya chakshurum litamyena tasmai shri gurave namah. Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayarupa Ramayam Dadati Swabhadantikam. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I'm guessing Vishwamarpa was asking everybody to come forward so as that we can make space at the back for all those hordes of people who are trying to storm the temple room. Vishwamarpa's wife, who I shouldn't say it like that, I should say Jagannath Ishri Devi Dasi, chose the verse. And I'm guessing we can understand why she chose this verse. This glorious vision of seeing nothing separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in one sense, that's an obvious statement, and we've heard it many, many times, that everything is connected to Krishna. Krishna's in everything and simultaneously beyond everything. So we've heard it many times. But at the same time, it requires realization that everything is connected to Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada used to say a devotee doesn't have a private life, and one of the reasons that he was saying that was that the super soul, of course, is in all of our hearts. But I suppose we can do some self-reflection to think of times when maybe we've done something or said something or acted in a certain way that if we had, Krishna standing in front of us, which in that sense we do, super soul in the heart, maybe we would have acted differently. So this understanding of everything connected to Krishna, we can very much relate to ourselves. But then in the context of today and the context of the previous month, when some part of the body is ailing, as Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, we look after, the rest of the body looks after that part. And we know that even sometimes the simplest of thing, we may cut our finger a little bit, you know, and next thing it's kind of the focus of our attention for a long period of time, a tiny little cut in the finger like that. But what's been said here in this purport by Srila Prabhupada is that the whole material creation, that part of it, actually quite a big part of it, a big chunk of it, in fact, actually if you drill down on the analogy, then the body probably wouldn't survive with the how serious an ailment the material world is in. But still, as devotees, we do whatever we can to bring those living entities back into the service of Krishna and back into a positive relationship with Krishna, as opposed to the less positive relationship that they currently have. And then Prabhupada quotes, of course, the Vijayavinaya Sampane verse and Pandita Samadarshana, that the Pandit sees with equal vision. It goes from the Brahman, the highest status of society, down to the dog eater. I mean, in my 56 years of living in this particular body, I don't think I've ever met a dog eater, or at least if I have, they haven't told me that they're a dog eater. But that's an incredible range that Prabhupada is giving, or sorry, Krishna's giving, that from the Brahman to the dog eater. But someone with transcendental vision will see everybody as equal. And I think it says there in the purport, it says, so they're forgetful of Krishna, and therefore they're in material consciousness. But again, going back to ourselves, it should be easy for us to have compassion for those persons who are completely separate from Krishna right now, or completely in material consciousness, because to varying degrees we slip into material consciousness from time to time, and we also appreciate the help actually when that happens. So really the goal, and I'm sure we can all identify with this, you know, maybe when we first join and we're very zealous, etc., that sometimes we can have a negative reaction to people in material consciousness, but really it should just inspire compassion. And it's through that inspiration of compassion that devotees go out for the whole month of December distributing Prabhupada's books in all sorts of weather. That's just such a practical manifestation of that compassion that a devotee has in his heart, because he or she has in their heart, because they're understanding that these are all devotees. All these people, every single person that you met on the street in December is ultimately a devotee, and it's just a question of them reconnecting like that. And it's interesting also, it's through the Christmas period, and of course the Christmas period is the celebration of the birth of Jesus Christ. Not that probably it was that date, by the way, the 25th of December. Apparently that was just done the week before the new year, so as that they could have a big festival in the dark days of whatever. But anyway, the principle is that it's celebrating the birth of Christ. And Prabhupada, of course, if you look on the Veda base and any references that Prabhupada made, one is any references he makes to Christianity or Christians, that's one thing, but then any reference that he makes to Jesus Christ, they're always super positive references that Prabhupada makes. And particularly on this principle of compassion, which again is what's driving devotees to go out and spread and preach Krishna consciousness and give people Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada explains in one conversation that is there a greater manifestation of compassion than Jesus Christ? He's talking about the different avatars come and they all preach or give a particular message, or they focus on a particular aspect of spiritual life. So he's saying how he's saying that Jesus Christ is very much compassion. And then he says, is there any greater expression of that compassion than you've just been? I'm not sure how long it took. Maybe some of the Christian theologians among us can tell me how long it took from the time that Christ was given the cross to carry to get to the hill of Calvary. I'm not sure how long that took, but it certainly took a long time. And he was carrying it, suffering like crazy in really, really hot weather like that. He had that crown of thorns on his head, etc. And then when he eventually got to this hill, then they laid down the cross, his own cross that he was carrying. They laid it down. They put him on the cross. Just as I've never met a dog eater, I've also never met anybody, and certainly not myself, that has had a nail hammered through their hand, through the other hand. And then, of course, you get to the feet. And the feet, of course, have more bones in them than the palm of the hands. And then they hammer a nail through both feet like that. And I think they cut him on the side and whatever they do like that. And then he's up there for many, many hours leaving his body. Basically, he's up there leaving his body. And the very last thing that we understand that he says is, "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do." Like what, again, you know, we're talking about the little cut in the finger, what to speak of these incredible suffering that you're put through. How any of us, we can only, I think, recognize. I mean, even you who go out on the street distributing books, if sometimes somebody's giving you abuse, sometimes it can be difficult just to walk away from it and do the right thing, what to speak of if they've actually crucified you, literally. So to say for your last words to be, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do," is just an incredible expression of compassion, and we can understand it like that. So this verse, Pandita Sama Darshana, the word Sama, we have it also in the 9th chapter, Sarabhuteshu. Krishna's saying, "I am equal to everyone." Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, thank you. So this principle of equality, I also picked out the 12th chapter here, where Krishna speaks again with the word Sama is there. And he's saying, "But those who fully worship the unmanifested, that which lies beyond the perception of the senses, the all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, fixed and immovable, the impersonal conception of the absolute truth, by controlling the various senses and being equally disposed to everyone, such persons engaged in the welfare of all at last achieve me." So again, this principle, even the impersonalists, if we're equally disposed to them, like that, this principle of equality and seeing with equal vision, and not getting sucked into the relative situation that anyone may find themselves in at any particular point in time, and focusing on that relative situation, rather seeing the greater picture at all time, and that equal vision. And that word samo, meaning equally disposed, equal, that Sanskrit word, apparently that is where the English word homogeneous came from. So we say the word homogeneous. So you might have homogeneous milk. Let's not get into the milk. Did I mention the four-letter word, milk? But homogeneous, that's milk that they've put through a process and made it all equal. They've blended the cream with the milk and all of that kind of thing. So that word homogeneous or whatever comes from the Sanskrit word samo or sama, meaning equal like that. So that's the message of this purport, to see everybody equal, so that it can inspire us to be compassionate and to give people, or to give people Krishna consciousness, and then engage in para upakara, or be agents of that, to better deliver. You're trying to give people Krishna consciousness. We're trying to give people Krishna consciousness, consciousness of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna is also known as Karuna Sindhu, an ocean of mercy. So the more that we're in that consciousness of everybody being equal, we're not better than them, etc., not making any of these kind of divisions on whatever level, mental, you know, intellectual, physical, whatever there are millions of ways that we can make distinctions in the material world, that we should steadfastly avoid making those distinctions. And then we're better agents, we'll be better able to reflect and deliver Krishna in his form as Karuna Sindhu. And ultimately, everybody in the material world is afraid. Everybody is afraid. Srila Prabhupada says in one purport, Prabhupada, as we know, is not shy from making absolute statements. And I know that most of us, if not all of us, as devotees of Prabhupada, devotees of Krishna, we like Prabhupada when he makes absolute statements. You know, it's kind of like, it's reassuring in many respects. So this statement he makes, that everybody is afraid of death. everybody is afraid of leaving the body. And he makes reference to devotees that the only way to avoid and to overcome that fear, the only way is to engage in the service of Krishna. And then in the context of engaging in the service of Krishna, the most protected service of all that we can do to protect us from that fear of death is giving Krishna consciousness to other people like that. So again, for the assembly of devotees today, you're right on track and you're doing exactly the right thing to avoid this difficulty that everybody finds themselves in. Prabhupada also, though, explains, he explains that people find millions of different ways to avoid this reality. So, for instance, some people would consider themselves atheists, which is a really incredible thing to consider yourself, actually. I mean, if somebody considers themselves an agnostic, that's absolutely fine. That's an honorable position in many ways, because they're basically, the statement that they're making is, I don't know. I don't know what the reality is. But to actually say that you're an atheist is actually a pretty stupid thing to say, because what you're then saying is, there is no such thing as God. I know there is no such thing as God. Now, that very same person, you can ask them, what's going on in the next room? And they won't even know what's going on in the next room, what to speak of down the road, what to speak of in the next town, what to speak of in the next country or whatever. They will have absolutely no clue what's going on. Yet they're making an absolute statement that there is no such thing as God. So it's actually a pretty stupid position to take. However, it's taken out of fear. It's taken out of fear to try to avoid the reality of what you face when you're leaving your body like that. So they want to avoid it. So if an afterlife doesn't exist, that's one way of avoiding it. I have another little speculation that, mental illness, Alzheimer's disease, maybe that's also generated. There's an element of generation of that in people wanting to avoid the reality of leaving the body. And what better way to avoid that than just considering that, or just not knowing who you are, where you are, what you're doing, not knowing anything about yourself. It's kind of a way that you can also avoid that. Probably explain. And then he gives another example, which is interesting in the part of the conversation that I was listening to. He gives another interesting example. He says, everybody, and then he says, except Socrates, which was really interesting. Wow, okay, except Socrates, he's not afraid of death. You know? And Prabhupada gives the example that when Socrates was sentenced to death, the thing that we're all afraid of, when he was sentenced to death, the reason he was sentenced to death, another interesting thing that also manifests the fear that people experience, when he was sentenced to death, the reason he was sentenced to death was because he accepted that we're all, or he accepted and presented and preached, etc., that we're all eternal spirit soul. And that was just not acceptable to the powers that be at the time, so therefore he was sentenced to death. After he, and this is where Prabhupada's saying that he's not afraid of it, after he was sentenced to death and the decision was made, the judge in the court, it went to court, it was a whole thing, the judge said to Socrates, how would you like to die? Would you like to be hanged? Would you like to drink hemlock? You know, it's like, talk about Hobson's choice, you know, it's like, yes. And he gives a list of ways, what would your preference be? And then after you've decided what way you want to die and you die, then what would you like us to do with your body? Would you like us to bury it? Would you like us to cremate it? And Socrates said, and this is where Prabhupada was emphasizing that he was beyond the fear of death. Socrates' response was that two responses. The first one was, it doesn't matter. It's just the body. And the second thing was, he said, catch me if you can, meaning I'm an eternal spirit soul. So yeah, you can sentence this body to death. You can ask me what I want to do with it. Catch me if you can. If you catch me, then I'll tell you, how I want to die and what I'm to do with it. So probably gives that example. That and then he says, but also stupid people also, and just from what I said at the beginning, please understand. that we should be just as equally favorable and compassionate to all these types of people, whatever the reasons are and whatever situation they find themselves in. But Prabhupada says also, he uses the word stupid. He says also stupid people, and he gives an example. And he's very, very specific. He says, in 1942, I was in Calcutta. And I think it was the Japanese were bombing Calcutta. Because the Brits were everywhere. Once the Brits were everywhere, you know, the sun never sets on the British Empire. Now they're leaving Europe. The Japanese were bombing Calcutta because the Brits were in Burma, Myanmar, like that. And Prabhupada says that he had to be in Calcutta. He couldn't leave for some reason. And he says he met some people when the bombs were raining down. And, you know, this material world is danger at every step. So here's a direct manifestation of that danger. The bombs are raining down in Calcutta. And some people, they thought they were fireworks. And they all came out of their house and they were looking up thinking, oh, look, wonderful fireworks. So it's also, you know, people, quote-unquote, stupid people like that. And then I'm reminded also of a famous English personality. I'll refer to him as Mr. Atheist Burrow. You may or may not pick up on who that actually is. I won't go any further because then I'll probably be breaching the protocol of giving Bhagavatam classes and naming people specifically. But Mr. Atheist Burrow, who does these wonderful films of the natural world, and all you ever see... Did I give something away? Obviously, these chaps here. Oh, it's the Welsh contingent. Contrary to the general English view, they're not stupid. they were the first to get it. So Mr. Atheist Burrow, making all these wonderful films, and it's interesting in those films that they perfectly illustrate the Bhagavatam verse, Hastani Sahastanam Apadani Chatus Padam Pahalgani Tatramahatam Jivo Jivasya Jivanam. That those with hands, they prey on those without hands. Those without legs prey on those with legs prey on those without legs. In general, the weak are the prey for the strong, and in essence, every living entity is food for another. What a horrible thought, you know. It's something that we don't necessarily identify with on a moment-to-moment basis because we're kind of at the top of the food chain. Of course, if you go to the jungles of West Bengal, you'll have to be careful. But every living entity is food for another. Which is an extraordinary statement. It's an extraordinary... But you see it. You see it on Mr. Atheist Burrow's films, you know, that all they ever do, as much as they are very attractive and very appealing, I think some of the most watched shows by the general public, it's very interesting. There's only four things that they ever do. And that's they show how they eat, they show how they sleep, or generally lack of it, because they're in so much anxiety, this thing about being afraid, they're in so much anxiety all the time. How they eat, how they sleep, how they mate, and how they defend. That's all that they ever show. So one living entity is food for another. Even they'll eat each other, if that's required, they'll eat each other. They'll even... The power of mating and the idea of leaving your seed like that, the males of some species will even eat the young of the female in order to convince the female to then mate with them. So this is a ruthless place, the material world. These people that you meet on the streets of London, the streets of the UK during the marathon, they're really not aware or conscious of the vulnerable and precarious situation that they actually find themselves in this material world. They're just not aware of it, just as we were not aware of it And why? Why is that awareness lacking? Because there are just so many distractions in the material world, so many distractions on all levels at all times. And of course, all of those distractions are completely orchestrated and governed orchestrated by Mayadevi, who, of course, is a wonderful devotee of Krishna, doing an absolutely wonderful job. You know, sometimes I guess when you're preaching to somebody, you're kind of thinking, hey, Maya, you know, can you leave this person alone for a few minutes so that maybe I'll be able to penetrate and give them some information. She's doing such a wonderful job. Of course, that is her job, to protect the spiritual world. That's, in essence, Maya Devi's job, that nobody gets to the... whatever it is, I was going to say the door. Yeah, I'm sure it's not a door, so who knows? The door of the spiritual world, with any impure desire in the heart. That's her job, to stop that happening. So therefore, so many distractions all the time. Prabhupada gives another story about a student who, when it came to exam time, had to write an essay on a certain subject, and the student had done no preparation for it, as I'm sure we can all relate to at exam time, particularly the Welsh. But you know, no preparation whatsoever. So the student sat down and thought, well, what the hell am I going to do? What am I going to do? I've done no preparation on this essay. So what did he do, or she? Started to speculate and wrote some nonsense. You know, basta dobendi, lectualize, placoni, cinder, was one of the phrases that this student wrote in the exam paper. The examiner, when he came to look at the exam, what this student had written, it took him a while to cop on, you know, because everyone's kind of false ego kicks in. You kind of think, well, maybe this is just some super, super intellectual piece of writing that this person's come up with, you know. So the examiner's thinking about it. Then he comes to the conclusion that, no, this guy's just messing around, you know, he's just whatever. But he gave him a pass mark. He gave him a pass mark on the basis of the ingenuity and the kind of whatever, the just chance in his arm, as we say, that he was actually given a pass mark. So that's one of the distractions. Prabhupada compares that to mental speculation. That's just mental speculation. And that's one of the distractions in the material world. There's a book, there's an author, you may have heard this author's name. His name is James Joyce. I don't know how many of you have heard of that author. And his most famous book is a book called Ulysses. There's a verse in there, Srimad Bhagavatam, I don't know why I'm looking at you, but there's a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, Nayasya Kahichid Rajan. And in essence, that means that no one knows the plan of the Lord. And even though great sages have studied the Lord's plan for millennia, they're none the wiser. So this chap, James Joyce, he has a book called Ulysses. I don't know if any of you have heard of Ulysses. And you have people who have taken PhDs on this book. They are experts on this book, Ulysses. And they will say exactly that. Nayasha Kahichid Rajan. You know, we've studied this book, Ulysses, you know, since for many decades, and we are none the wiser what it means. It's just a bunch of, you know, really weird, obscure kind of writings like that. So mental speculation, that's one. We were talking about, you know, quote-unquote stupid living entities. Don't the ones who consider themselves more intelligent, how much do they love mental speculation? I mean, we all love, to some degree, mental speculation. It's such a lure for the material world, you know, to be able to speculate and get absorbed in it and then have millions of discussions around the, you know, essentially unimportant subject matter. Then another distraction probably gives the story of the man who's deaf. He's deaf, and he's calling his wife. So he says, come here, dear, come here, dear. And his wife is in another room, and she'll acknowledge she's busy doing something, and she'll say, yes, just a minute, dear, you know. But he doesn't hear that. He doesn't hear, because he's deaf. So then he concludes that she's deaf. Like that. So Prabhupada explains, Atmavan Manyate Jagat. We're all absorbed in our own world, completely absorbed in our own world, seeing everything from our angle of vision like that, which again is another distraction in the material world. If we, and people do, you know, like like that phrase, you know, the sun never sets on the British Empire. It's like they're thinking that they are the center of the universe. But it's not just them, of course. It's everybody in the material world that's affected by the material energy and affected by Maya. We're thinking we're the center of the universe. We're thinking that we're so important. We're thinking, you know, you can see that also in modern news. You'll see that if a bomb goes off in London, and of course, how hellish is that, and tragic and horrible and all of those kind of things. And, you know, I don't know, 10 people die or something like that, lose their lives. It's like it's such a big thing. It's such a big thing for such a lot, and so much attention and focus is put on it. But then in another part of the world, somewhere in Africa, something blows up and 100 people die, and you barely hear about it because we're all thinking that we are the most important and that we're the center of this universe like that. So this man is accusing his wife of being deaf, even though he's the one that's deaf. He didn't hear her responding like that. So, you know, he's brainwashed by that kind of propaganda. And in the material world, we're accused of that. We're accused of being, quote-unquote, brainwashed, whatever. By who? By people who are completely brainwashed by the material energy. You know, are accusing us like that. So Prabhupada, this Atmavan Manyate Jagat. Then the Prabhupada talks about the principle of Dadati Pratigrinati, that we all need each other, and we all need support and help. We all need, of all of those six items, the ability that we're intelligent enough, humble enough, to know that the revealing our mind is a very, very important thing, and that we should do it. We should engage in revealing the mind. And then even more important, that we can actually find somebody that we can reveal our minds to in confidence, because that thing in confidence is the most important part of that sentence, that we're able to do it in confidence. But Prabhupada gives an example, again, I'd never heard it until recently. I'm sure many of you have heard it. He gives the example where there's a hunter is out hunting, and he's hunting in the kingdom of the king, like that. And he catches a fox. But then he sees the king, and the king's men are coming towards him, not in any aggressive way, they're just kind of passing by. But he panics, and he thinks he's doing something wrong. Maybe he was doing something wrong, maybe he wasn't supposed to be hunting. But anyway, he's thinking he's doing something wrong. So he takes the fox, and he hides it under his coat. And then the king stops and says, "Oh, good day, how's it going?" And it's a very nice, pleasant exchange, but still he's too paranoid or whatever to actually let the king know that he's been hunting and he has the fox under his coat. So he leaves the fox there, and the king talks for 5 or 10 minutes. And when the king leaves, the man falls in two, because the fox under his coat has eaten him away like that, and he kills him like that. But Prabhupada's using that in the context of Dadati Pratigrinati, that we're revealing our mind in confidence. That if we don't do that, then the tendency is we start to eat away inside, and that's a very negative, bad thing for us. So the principle of doing that, revealing our mind in confidence, but also finding somebody who we can reveal our minds to. Another distraction, that we think that we're too intelligent. But can I actually give that? That we're thinking that we're too intelligent. And Prabhupada gives the example of the logician who sees the, and I think we have here at Bhaktivedanta Manor, at least we used to have here, the bull going around the, what do we call that? What do you call the thing they go around, they pull? Mill. Thank you. It's incredibly close to milk. Did I say milk again? So the bull is going around the mill like that. And generally, we put a bell on them, and then we know that they're going around. We can hear the bell ringing as they're going around. So the logician is looking there, and he's seeing this, and he says to the farmer, he says, "Ah, but how do you really know that the bull is working? Maybe the bull is just stopped, and he's not moving at all, except his neck, and he's going ding, 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 and ringing the bell just to fool you, like that, you know?" And the farmer responds and says, "No, the bull is more honest than logicians." He's more honest than logicians like that. So this thing that we think we're too intelligent, we can start to feel we can trick Krishna. Again, going back to Paramatma, super soul in the heart, we can never trick Krishna. But yeah, you know, people are always thinking how they can, what do they call it? You know, that one of the goals in life for some people is to commit the perfect crime. You know, like that, because they want to think that they're so intelligent that they bewilder everybody and nobody actually catches what they do. Duplicitousness, another distraction in the material world. And Prabhupada gives that example of Darwin, you know. It's kind of like Darwin and everybody. Darwin was the 1840s, 50s, was he? He was around that time, 1860s, I think 1860s. Was. Anyway, it was that kind of time. What's that? That's 150 years ago, that kind of time that he was around. So it's 150 years, and it's still the predominant teaching of the origin of life, even in schools. And actually, I read a really interesting part of, I say part because the book's really thick, you know, Dhrutakarma Brew's Forbidden Archaeology. But I remember reading a very interesting part of it where he's talking about, he's talking about Darwin's philosophy and Darwin's theory. And of course, the theory essentially is that, you know, survival of fittest, and we all evolve, materially evolve up through the species. You know, but their conclusion, Darwin's conclusion, is that we came from monkeys like that. And Prabhupada is just explaining that, you know, mode of goodness, cows, mode of passion is the tigers and lions and all of those, and mode of ignorance is the monkeys. So, you know, Darwin's father was a monkey like that, you know. So even though... And he's proudly announcing it, you know. Yeah, my old man was a monkey, like that. So we understand that they're coming from the mode of ignorance like that. So duplicitousness, that even though we're so bereft of all of these things, that we present it in a kind of, arrogant way like that. Then there's cheaters and the cheated. A couple more of these. What time are we, Vishwamitra? We've gone time. Okay, I'm going to rush it. So cheaters and the cheated. Prabhupada gives the example of the mystic yogis who encourage villagers to come. Again, this thing about, you know, the modern day equivalent now is the lotto. How many people have ever bought a lotto ticket? The modern day equivalent is the lotto. People buy these things, you know, even though they know statistically it's like one chance in whatever it is, 390 million, you know. Yet they'll buy, thinking somehow or another this is a cheap route, a quick route to becoming wealthy. So probably as an example, the old day, you had mystics who would collect gold from people, because they would tell them, if you bring us your gold, then I will reproduce and make 10 times, 20 times, 100 times. And probably says that oftentimes what would happen is all the villagers would come and they would give their little ounce of gold, few grams of gold, whatever, they would give to the mystic. So the mystic would collect it and he'd end up with a whole bunch. And then the only magic that happened was that he would then disappear during the so-called ceremony to multiply this gold by an unlimited amount. He would just vanish and disappear. That was the only magic that was taking place, you know. So cheaters and cheated. And Prabhupada then talks about the over-endeavor, the city that allows you to become so light that you can walk on water, and the young man or middle-aged man or whatever coming back saying, oh, after 10 years with my teacher, now I'm light enough, I can walk on water. And, you know, the elder of the village says, really? And it took you 10 years for that? It just cost me 2 paisa to go across the river on the boat, you know? So this thing of that we over-endeavor for things. But then the final thing I would say is about acharya, the principle of acharya, that is so important to Srila Prabhupada. And, of course, Srila Prabhupada was the absolute perfection of the principle of acharya, the epitome of that principle. He gives the one example of a lady who wants to stop her son eating sweets. Because, you know, as we know, eating too much sweets is... we know that one, don't we? Eating too much sweets. Yeah, we can relate to this one. That she wanted her son to... He was eating too many sweets, wanted her son to stop eating sweets. So she tried many, many different ways to try to achieve that, and she was never successful. So she decides to bring her son to a sadhu, thinking the potency of a sadhu may have a positive effect. So she brings him to the sadhu, and the sadhu hears what she has to say. And then the sadhu says, bring him back in 5 days. So she's thinking, 5 days, 5 days more of eating sweets, he might be dead by the time I bring him back. But anyway, she goes off and she brings him back 5 days later. And as soon as she brings him back, the sadhu sits the boy down and in a very grave and serious demeanor and serious grave voice, the sadhu says, you must stop eating sweets. And the boy stopped eating sweets. The mother came back a week later or a month later, whatever it was. She comes back and she says, wow, that was amazing, you know, however you delivered that, or the sincerity with which you said it, it had the impact. My son, ever since you said it, has not eaten one single sweet since that time. He says, but I'm just curious, why did you tell us to come back 5 days later? And the sadhu said, because I had to learn to give up eating sweets first. And after 5 days, I was convinced, yes, I've stopped eating sweets and I can continue to stop eating sweets. Therefore, I have the authority and the shakti, whatever, to actually request this boy to stop eating sweets. So that principle of acharya. And then you can do anything, actually. And although, you know, there's different angles to this particular final thing that I will say, that there's different angles to it. There's one nice book distribution story where devotees in America, I can't remember, I think it was 72, I can't remember, 73 maybe, They decided to wear Santa Claus outfits while they were out on the marathon distributing books like that. And afterwards, there was some discussion about it with the devotees and Prabhupada. Is this a good thing to do? Isn't this a good thing to do? And one of the devotees, I think it was Rameshwar Prabhu, he said, well, actually, here's one newspaper article, Srila Prabhupada, that's very positive about this. And Prabhupada says, oh, really? That's great. What's the article? And Rameshwar read it out, and it said that the Hare Krishna devotees have taken to wearing Santa Claus outfits while they're distributing their literature in the shopping centers, or the malls, sorry, in the malls, at Christmas time. And the person writing the article goes on to say, how wonderful is this? They are bringing back the real message of Christmas spirituality by giving out their books. So they are the real Santa Clauses. So I'll finish on that. You're all the real Santa Clauses. Giving out transcendental literature. Don't wear them in January and February. It doesn't work. But you're the real Santa Clauses, giving out the most precious, every single other present that you could put together would not make the slightest indentation on the present of one of Srila Prabhupada's books. So thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki!